property and territory are a big deal to us, whether it's physical land or personal space. We have our boundaries. When my husband and I moved here last year, we ended up buying a house, and the gentleman who we bought it from told us that there was this piece of land sort of next to our property that when the area had been divided, this little piece was, for some reason, skipped or left out, and it was never assigned to any of the landholders in the area. So apparently, according to the guy that we bought the house from, the township or whatever came to him and said, "We need to assign this land to somebody and we're going to give it to you. Taxes and all." So after we moved in and got to know the neighbors, we realized that not only did we buy this house, which is actually a little strip of land, we also inherited a whole history of unhappy neighbors. Because this land ran parallel with the county road and all of our neighbors' backyards. So now the property we own cuts across all of their properties. We don't know how the story actually went, but if we were going to go with the majority, we would say that our neighbors have a better idea of what actually happened. But possession and property and ownership is a big deal. We want what's ours. We don't want anyone else to interfere with it. Our parable today is a series of parables that Jesus has been sharing with the Pharisees about how we relate with each other and how we relate with God. And it would be nice to think that we could just be bystanders hearing the story. But the reality is we fall into multiple places into this particular parable. Not only do we fall into the category of the awful tenants who think they're entitled to everything, we are at times also the Pharisees and the chief priests wanting to push Jesus aside because we don't want to feel guilty. And we're also supposed to be the people that will produce those fruits of the kingdom. Now we're going to start with the end of the parable, because that's really my favorite part. The chief priests and the Pharisees finally realized after these series of parables that Jesus is actually talking about them. Okay? They know that Jesus is talking about them, but they don't really get the point. Because what do they want to do? They want to arrest Jesus. They want to get him out of the way because they don't like what Jesus is saying. It's pretty obvious that Jesus is naming God as the landowner and the Pharisees as the tenants, not giving back to God what is God's, right? And it's also pretty obvious that we are also like the Pharisees in that position. We like to have what we have. We work hard for what we have. And often we think we're entitled to what we have. So Jesus is telling this nice little story about a landowner and his tenants. And then Jesus asks the Pharisees and the chief priests, what should the landowner do with those awful tenants? And they pipe up and say, you should kill those. You should kill those wretched tenants for behaving that way. Give the land to someone more deserving. Jesus was sort of talking about the Pharisees. The Pharisees have sort of condemned themselves. If God had listened to what the Pharisees thought the landowner should do, right? So if we were to be asked that question, how might we answer? When we have those moments of entitlement, thinking we know it all and own it all, and God says, what should I do with these awful tenants who think they own everything that I have given them? What would our answer be? We might answer differently now, knowing the whole story. But we like to justify and cover up our selfish ways. We deserve this land because we paid for it, or because we're good people, or just because, with no real good reason at all. And when we see someone else doing something wrong in our eyes, we like to seek out justice. We want to see them get what they deserve for their wrongdoings. But Jesus responds so much differently. Jesus reminds reminds the Pharisees of the Hebrew scriptures, which they have heard. The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing, and it is amazing in our eyes. The stone that the builders rejected is ultimately comes to be Jesus. God has sent several messengers to try to share God's love, and ultimately Jesus comes, and Jesus is still rejected. He's crucified for our sins. And this was the Lord's doing. This was God's way. And it is amazing in our eyes. The only thing we can do with the story is stand and look upon it with awe. Because we don't understand God's ways and hows and whys for God's actions. God's ways are not our ways. We often behave as if we're still trying to earn some sort of salvation, but it's already been given to us. The landowner has already forgiven the debt. The mortgage has been wiped clean. And it's amazing. Because we can't quite grasp why. But because Jesus is the cornerstone that was rejected, we are granted to be the ones that produce the fruits of the kingdom. The church, the Christian church, are to produce the fruits of the kingdom. These parables are not just about our feelings of entitlement, but it's also about relationships. What should the landowner do? Of course, the landowner being God, we know God forgives us. All right, so we know we're forgiven. We know that all of the stuff around us is just for lease. We're just borrowing it. We know that God works in amazing ways with us and through us. So what are we going to do with it? God didn't condemn the tenants. God stood with patience and waited, and God still stands with patience, waiting for us to figure it out. So are we going to continue to feebly justify our actions and to keep what we read as our own? How much more does God have to patiently wait for us? How can we turn our lives around to give back to the landowner what belongs to the landowner? The door hasn't been shut. The story was written. Christ died for our sins, and the invitation is still open for us to give back to God what is God's. Don't wait for the landowner to come and collect the rent, or for God to convince you to follow. But take up the fruits of the kingdom, the things that you have been given, and return them to God. Build those relationships with those around you. Let go of the baggage that you hold on to against others. And watch God's amazing love take place. Now, it's not wrong to save up for a new toy or a vacation, or to want to buy things new rather than used. But perhaps, in that process, we can together as a community, as a church, create some other habits. For example, this past summer, when Corey and I were talking about the mission trip, we got to a point where we weren't sure if we had all our spots filled. And we thought there might have been an extra spot. And so different ideas run into the head, what do? You know, we paid for the spot, who can we get to fill it? And we thought, what if we could work to a point where instead of just raising enough money for the mission trip for our youth to go on this mission trip, what if we raised extra so that we could open up a couple extra spots for, let's say, our friends over at Heaven Up to come and join us? What if perhaps you're saving money for a vacation or for a new car or for some item that you've been wanting? What if we were to push that goal, extend it a little bit, to make ourselves work a little bit harder so that we can enjoy this life that we've been blessed with, but we can also turn those blessings on to others so that we can go out and give those fruits of the kingdom to others so that they, in turn, can also share the fruits of the kingdom. It's not easy. It's never done. We never get to a finish point. But God continually calls us to turn to God, to strive to live in God's ways, so that we can see and witness to God's amazing work in our lives and the world.